on brain function and aging of the brain and maintaining brain function. And as Roger mentioned in the email that you all got, since you're on the call tonight, I'm sure you got it, was maintaining the brain really starts in the womb. And that's what the mother puts in her body and so forth. And there's really no one better to talk about what we're going to talk about tonight than Roger. And a lot of you don't know this because Roger doesn't talk about it, but he does have a couple of products here that are going to be going through clinical trial. One of them here is in the United States for brain function and brain-related diseases, which looks really promising for results. And again, we're not at really liberty to talk about it right now. And the second product we have is an anti-aging product that they're doing clinical studies in Europe right now. And that'll be on the market here probably in the next 6 months. I don't think it's going to be in the States for a little longer than that, but quite amazing stuff. And, you know, I discovered Roger about 6 years ago. My name is Zach, for those of you who don't know, and I am Roger Drummer's business partner. And when I met him, I had a lot of issues I was dealing with myself. And many of you know Roger is an herbalist, but he's much, much more than that. You know, he's not only got a passion for herbs, he has a passion for brain function because he had some brain issues in the past that he had to deal with. And his curiosity with herbs has gotten to the point that he's, you know, developing products or have formulated products that really help the body. But it, along the same lines of research, he would always throw in brain function products, or rather, I don't know what line of what phrase you want to actually use on it, but products that would enhance or help the brain. And those are because of issues that he had to deal with. But when I met Roger 6 years ago, he had a product that is very similar to the one that he currently sells now, Tian Chi. And I was dealing with chronic fatigue, low-level depression, a little bit of ADD, and I really had a hard time just balancing the way I felt. I mean, I would self-medicate with alcohol. When I met Roger and drank that tonic for the first time, it was like my whole world opened up. And I knew this guy was onto something special. So 6 years later, here we are doing business. And behind the scenes, again, a lot of you don't know, but we've been working on products that relate specifically to the brain. The anti-aging, one of the main basis for that product is anti-aging of the brain. So the results that are coming out and the people who have tested it just verbally have had incredible results with it. We're looking forward to get back to clinical trials. And Roger, I'm not sure exactly when they're going to be coming back, but I'm hoping we get that information out soon. But anyway, what I'd like to do tonight, Roger has a flight early morning, so we're going to keep it short, 35 minutes. We're going to do short questions and answers after the call. But Roger, I'm going to hand this over to you and talk about brain function.
All right, we're going to talk about children, brain function, and babies, and preventative health, because it seems like everything we talk about is preventative, and, you know, that's what the whole health industry is about, is preventative health. But you don't see that much too often about training people about having children, and in particular, training mothers about how to eat, and that type of training should be going on for a year or so before they actually have an idea of conceiving and having a child. So a lot of education needs to be focused toward this. And you know, whenever I get on this subject, I always think about fetal alcohol syndrome. And everybody's usually somewhat familiar with that because it has to do with the type of brain damage that you see in people as a result of the mother drinking alcohol within the first 4 weeks of pregnancy. And the problem with that is that almost hardly anybody plans a pregnancy. You know, it's one of those things where most people are out drinking up until they find out the fact that they are pregnant. And so most people are in that time frame where they've already given their child a chance of having brain damage because of drinking alcohol. And I wonder myself if they, maybe if their kid wasn't born with something that you could clinically call fetal alcohol syndrome, if maybe just the IQ has dropped 10 points, or some other thing became slow to develop because of the exposure to alcohol, even in mild amounts. And so we need to have some sort of education, even in the high school, and education through the medical system, although I don't think that'll ever happen just because they're overwhelmed with what they do now. But it almost seems like anybody on this call, if you're parents now and you have children or are going to have children, it's up to you to actually educate them about what they should be looking for, what they should be eating, what they should be doing as they prepare to go forward to have a kid. And the easiest thing to do for anybody is to start eating organic food. If they have any idea and they're into health at all, they have to learn the importance of eating organic food. And the main reason for doing that is that it has less toxic residue on it, less pesticides, less, you know, any type of chemical spray. Besides pesticides, there's exposure to certain plastics, there's all these different things. Once you get into the organic food movement, then you become aware of drinking out of plastic containers and using food that's wrapped in plastic or cans that are lined in plastic and all these different things. And that's just as huge as the pesticide issue. So once you can get somebody into the organic food movement, part of that is just about education, self-education. You learn about all the different things that are going on. And the reality is, in this country, and I'm sure it's this way all over the world, that we're literally swimming in a toxic soup every single day. If you spend a few days just studying this topic, it becomes apparent and overwhelming to realize how much you're actually exposed to every single day. How much is in every bit of the food that's out there. There's even trace amounts in organic food because the planet has gotten to the point now where not even the rainwater has chemical residue in it. Even the water that they might irrigate their fields, no matter, you know, they don't have control over where that comes from. The EPA, for example, just decided that they're going to reduce the amount of fluoride that they allow in drinking water because children are getting exposed to fluoride from so many different areas that they're afraid of fluoride overload in children. And they're banning one fluoride pesticide that's used on tree nuts and different foods, and usually they're a food that might stay in storage a little bit longer, and they're spraying in warehouses for termites and bugs like that that would get into crops that are in storage. They're going to ban that because, again, there's too much fluoride exposure in this country. A few years back, people realized that there's high levels of fluoride in a lot of the juices sold in the grocery store. And how could that be? Because a lot of farms are irrigating from water systems that originate in towns, and they've had fluoride added to the water. And then they're irrigating their farms or their orchards or whatever it is with that water. And so we're just being bombarded constantly by chemicals. If you don't become aware of your food supply, then you're just basically the average person walking around with hundreds and hundreds of toxic chemicals in your bloodstream. And if you can imagine what that's like for a woman who's pregnant and carrying a baby, how much of that baby is actually exposed to. And I've mentioned this a few times on the call, and if this doesn't frighten you, then nothing will. But the Environmental Working Group always cites studies that are done every single year where they take a group of children from different parts of the country and they test their blood immediately on birth. They prick their toe and take a blood sample. And what they find out is that they, on average, have about 280 known toxic chemicals in their bloodstream at birth. And so that means throughout every bit of their development in the womb, they are swimming around in a sea of toxic chemicals. And so every stage of their development, of their entire nervous system, is in the presence of chemicals. And the vast majority of these are all considered to be neurotoxins. So they're disrupting the formation of their nerve cells in the womb. And if a woman usually has that many toxins in her bloodstream that's affecting the child, then it's obvious that they're not on a good eating program, and they're probably using foods like diet sodas, food with MSG in it, aspartame, all these different things that are known neurotoxins, and eating a poor diet that has a lot of other man-made chemicals in it. And so when that child is born, when he's still got now the next 3 years to where they're going to be developing most of the neural activity in their brain. This goes into this huge, like, growth spurt the first 3 years. And it doesn't stop there, but it's a huge spurt the first 3 years. So more than likely, that child's going to be fed some of that anyway, either through breast milk for a short period of time. It's going to have chemicals in their food, because if the mother's not eating well throughout the pregnancy, they're not really going to feed the child well either. And so the reality is, again now, they're going to be exposed to all these toxins. And now what do we do in the first few months? We're loading them up with injections of drugs, supposedly, to boost their immune system and protect them from different illnesses. These vaccinations that all these kids are getting, for years, if you followed the health industry, we've all been told that these vaccinations play a role in autism. There's been all these trying to establish that these certain vaccinations cause autism. I actually don't believe that any of them cause autism, but the main theory that I actually believe to be true, it just resonates with me, and is that there's not one known vaccination that causes autism. There is probably just an overload of the nervous system with a whole variety of vaccinations, because we sometimes give them 8 or 9 at a time, and by the time the child's even a year old, it's just their system is becoming overloaded. So if you can imagine a child's been in the womb and for 9 months has been exposed to neurotoxins at a very high level, they're probably born with a nervous system that's not fully healthy. So it's barely hanging on. Their body's just barely in that state of health to where it's just kind of trying to maintain equilibrium and form its brain and form its nervous system. And along comes 9 to 25 to 30 some vaccinations that all disrupt nervous system function and cause inflammation by stimulating immune function, and that in itself causes a type of inflammation in the nervous system. And when that happens, I believe it's kind of a breakdown of the nervous system. It's like the old saying, the straw that broke the camel's back, that one last thing that just could not take any more weight, it just went into chaos. And that's what I think is happening with vaccination, is that you're just dumping so many things in this poor body that it's having so much trouble maintaining equilibrium anyway, and then it just goes over the deep end. And that's why you see a vast majority of kids don't develop any symptoms or signs of autism until they're 18 months old to 2.5, somewhere in that. All of a sudden, they just go into a whole different type of behavior and shut down. And so, you know, that makes sense to me, as opposed to pinning it on one particular vaccination. Although, if you study those at all, you'll see that there's a variety of side effects with each and every one of them. And each and every one of them have associated neural disorders that happen to a certain percentage of people. So in that case, if you're combining 9 to 30 of them and putting them in a body and that's already weakened by diet, and not only the diet itself that contains these chemicals, but you're combining that with a diet that doesn't have in it what the body needs to actually maintain and form a perfect nervous system. That's another point. Whenever you're deficient of these nutrients that your body needs to actually make all these things, then it's much harder for your body to not only develop properly, but develop properly in the presence of all these chemicals. I think that if your nutrition is really high, then you probably would be able to withstand it much better than some, you know, a baby that's literally starving for nutrition in the womb. And so you combine all these things, and you're going to end up with all this. Like, it's almost an epidemic of neural diseases that go on in this country. We talk about ADD, we talk about autism. There's so many more cases of Tourette's, and all these different things are coming up to where people are just, it's almost like the medical system is getting overburdened, not only with just nervous system disorders, but they now know what the mother eats determines your chances of getting diabetes. It determines your chances of getting just about any disease. And so, when you combine that with the fact that what I've seen in my lifetime, in the last 40 years, the food supply has just gotten terrible. And people's food choices are really just built around what they consider to be comfort food. You know, we're so inundated with advertising and you know, billboards, TV, movies telling us what to eat, drink, wear, everything, that we basically end up eating without having any conscious awareness about what we're actually doing. And very little of that stuff that's advertised and pushed on us actually has a beneficial effect of supporting anything that goes on in our system. Some of it just gives calories. And, you know, even even in this country, it's kind of almost, the greatest example of really bad nutrition is the fact that since they've introduced diet soda and really pushed it in the last 20 years, the country has become more obese. So the thing about the fact that we're drinking more and more non-calorie drinks than ever before and getting fatter and fatter and fatter. And why is that? Because, well, the main sweetener used in those is something that disrupts your nervous system. And it's something that messes up how your body actually regulates its hunger and how it regulates or shuts off or turns on that feeling of being satiated or feeling like satisfied with something that you drank or you ate. And so your entire system goes into chaos and you put on all this weight. I was checking through the Tampa airport last week. I was getting searched. I get searched every time I fly. I'm just a dangerous looking guy. If you've ever seen me, you all know that. But I was getting searched and the guy just asked me what I was doing in Tampa, and I told him I was giving lectures on drinking water and all this stuff. And he goes, "You know what? I had a test with the doctor and my blood pressure was going crazy and I just decided to quit drinking diet soda and I lost 40 pounds in 1 year. I never changed a single thing I ate and I just drank water instead of soda. Lost 40 pounds." Because it's just amazing to me. And then he had to go because they can't really start up much conversation. And he just offered that to me. What a great example. Here's a guy who knows nothing about health, but because he got a scare with blood pressure, he quit drinking diet soda, switched to water, and lost 40 pounds in 1 year. So we just don't think about how all these things disrupt our entire system. And we don't think about the fact that all these pesticides, all the plastics that we're exposed to, the BPA, the phthalates, all these different chemicals that are in our containers that hold food or drinks that we actually consume, all have been classified not only as neurotoxins like the aspartame, MSG, those things, but they fall into this other category of endocrine disruptors, meaning they disrupt your glandular system. They disrupt how hormones are produced and absorbed at receptor sites in the body. And there's all kinds of scientific papers, this is pretty frightening, about how, in fact, one of them, the title had to do with the fact that maybe the male species is being phased out because all the different plastics and things they find in the environment all cause for a feminizing of the male species. They interfere with testosterone production, with the absorption of it, the utilization of it. All these different pathways are disrupted by these toxic chemicals. One of the most frightening things that I read, which I try to put the pieces together, all these things when you read it, but is the exposure to BPA. We all know that's a toxic chemical in plastic. But in every animal that they've ever exposed that to, it screwed up the glandular system, particularly the reproductive organs. And no matter how well they fed them after that, after birth, they could never actually get it back to normal. So it never went away. With some of these disrupted things, the body will heal itself and revert, never revert. And so it really made me think about all the near epidemic proportions of prostate issues in this country and how much we've been exposed to plastics and never ever thought about it. And, you know, plastics is one of the big things you cannot hardly ever get away from. And this is, again, one of the reasons why you eat really well and you take supplements, because it supplies your body with something to make enzymes to bind with these chemicals and get it out of your system. So if you're being exposed to it, then you have to eat really well. And just by saying that, it's kind of dumb because you are being exposed to it. You have to eat really well. There's articles just came out on BPA where they found out that almost every cash register receipt you get from a store, whether it's a fast food place or a grocery store or any of these things, is coated with BPA. And it's actually absorbing into your skin through your fingertips. And that type of chemical, that's all you need, is that little bit of an exposure to end up in your bloodstream and disrupt your health. So, I mean, this is the environment we live in. This is why if you don't really have anything, you might return to the store. You should just say no to the receipt and walk out. And some of the worst people that were violators are the ones that had the most BPA on the receipt was Whole Foods, McDonald's, CVS Pharmacy, Walmart, Safeway. All these stores had really high levels of BPA chemical on their receipt. The funny, I had to laugh. Two of the stores that didn't have any were Starbucks and Target, or Target Brothers, I like to call it. But they didn't have any. So, the reality is that, think about the average person. They're drinking water out of they're drinking city water out of plastic bottles. They're drinking, eating food out of cans, which are all coated with BPA. Even their receipts are exposing them to it. So again, unless you make that move to get into the whole food industry, to move into the organic food industry and start to educate yourself about food, you don't find out about any of these things. But once you start doing that, it's a natural progression to be able to find out what exactly is going on in your environment, because the whole organic food movement is about finding out what's going on in your environment, educating yourself, raising your level of awareness. You have to become conscious about every single thing you put in your body, because those chemicals that your child is being exposed to in the womb is going to have an effect on the diseases they get when they're in their 40s and 50s. It's going to have an effect on whether their brain can actually withstand the type of assault it's going to have throughout its lifetime and be able to either maybe get Alzheimer's or not, or dementia or not, or any of these other brain diseases. Even Parkinson's now is pretty much, it's been decided that Parkinson's is related to an exposure to toxic chemicals, probably in the womb or in early childhood. There's a very high percentage of people that are exposed to different pesticides in their gardening or out in the yard that end up getting Parkinson's as they age. And so, again, how could that possibly be happening? Because of that residue that makes it into the brain and usually attaches itself somewhere and causes extreme inflammation and damages that part of the brain. And it might only be one particular part. It's the kind of funny thing about chemicals is they all have an affinity for one or two particular things, and they tend to reside there. And if you've ever listened to any of my talks on stress, and we all know that when you're under stress and producing too much stress hormone, then parts of your brain that are related to memory, which is the hippocampus, actually become like a sponge and soak up many, many, many more times as much toxic chemical that make it into your brain than normal. So it becomes like a sponge for toxic chemicals, like a waste dump. And that's the part of your brain that is responsible for retrieving memory, laying down memory. It's the part that's almost always disrupted during Alzheimer's and dementia. And again, a lot of it's just related to how much stress you've had in your life and how many toxic chemicals you've been exposed to. And so again, I think that, in my opinion, with the treatment of a lot of these things, that we have to look back at how can we actually repair the brain by giving it something that it actually needs, and look at the fact that maybe kids throughout their whole development need to be on a diet that pays attention specifically to brain development. I think that every kid when they're born should be doing some sort of omega-3 supplement. Because I doubt if anybody's really aware, although they are putting it in milk now, you can find DHA in organic milk. There's more of an awareness about things like omega-3 in the diet, but the reality is that very few people have very high levels of it, and you can't get it from fish anymore. You can go on the level of fish that the EPA tells you to eat every week, actually puts you over the limit for your amount of mercury that you're supposed to have while you're pregnant. So think about that. They recommend that you eat more fish then would be safe for you if you're worried about mercury exposure while you're pregnant. And everybody should be worried about mercury exposure. I mean, that's a given. I will never forget back in 2004 when Bush was president, not to single him out or anything. This is not a talk about politics, but he was president, and the EPA came out with a paper that they had been working on for a couple of years and announced that the mercury levels were so high in America that one out of every eight women had so much mercury in their system that it would probably result in a birth of a child with low brain activity or damaged IQ. And so right after that report came out, I think it took like maybe 2 weeks, they fired about 40 of the scientists that were on that project. And within another couple of weeks, they actually lessened the restrictions on mercury emissions from factories because they thought that it would hurt the economy if they made them do anything about it. Or they made it, actually that was the funny law where they passed and said it was up to the factory and company itself to regulate itself, which I still find to be one of the funniest things I've ever read in my life. So the reality is the government's not out there to really protect you from these things. The government's job is to keep the economy going and make sure that we all have enough money to keep the economy going. And so that's one of their main jobs. So the reality is you still have to look at all these things yourself. And if you can't eat 12 ounces of fish, just 12 ounces of fish in a week, usually will put you over the limit for your mercury for that week without doing something in your diet to offset that and move the mercury out of your system. And if you're one of those people out there that loves fish, I would actually recommend that you eat at least one or two heads. Now, I'm talking complete heads of fresh cilantro every week because that's one of the main foods that your body uses to bind with mercury and move it out of your system. You could take chlorella, which is a green food supplement, and you can actually take a cap or two of it while you're eating your fish or maybe eating your sushi that may be high in mercury, and it binds really well with it when it's in your digestive system and then moves it out your colon. The problem is you don't ever want to be constipated when you're eating food that has mercury in it or you're detoxing from mercury in any way, because if you're not going to the bathroom at least twice a day with a lot of fiber, you're just going to reabsorb all of it anyway. And so you have to pay attention to these things. But if you're worried about fish, you should never really consume shark or swordfish or tuna, oysters, halibut, walleye, pike, bass. I'm kind of getting the picture that you shouldn't really eat anything. Because all these things are very, very high in mercury. And so, especially if you're pregnant, just don't even go near it. If you're not, maybe once a week. I was really happy to see that wild Alaskan salmon was actually on the list of being very, very low in mercury. So that's one of the few things I do eat once in a while. So you have to look at how you're going to be eating for a year or two before you actually decide to become pregnant. So, you know, I doubt if there's that many people out here listening to my call that are young enough to be thinking around about having children. It's probably the crowd out there that maybe has some of their own kids that are getting into that age limit now that where they think it might be important. And you have to educate them about that. You have to get them on drinking water that doesn't have plastics in it and other toxic chemicals, fluoride and chlorine. You have to educate them about the mercury issue. It's a huge issue. And if you're someone that's considering or going to be having kids in the next couple of years, you should be going down and having a blood test. See what your levels of toxins are in your bloodstream and start to go on a diet that actually does something about it. The easiest way to do something about it is to eat food that doesn't have anything in it or as very little pesticides and chemicals in it as possible, and then to eat a highly nutritious diet, because things like, you know, cruciferous vegetables, any type of green food, fruits with antioxidants in it, you know, the red pigments, the blue, the purple, all those anthocyanins find in different products. All those things contain antioxidants which either directly bind with toxic chemicals in your diet or help your body produce the enzymes it needs to get rid of it on its own. And your body does that really well. Your liver has a whole detox system built into it, and it's called a phase one, phase two. And phase one, it literally takes all these carcinogens and toxins out of your food and exposes it so that phase two can match it up with an enzyme, bind to it, and move it out of your system by itself. The problem is that you have to eat food that has enough nutrition in it to supply the body with what it needs to make those particular enzymes. So most people in this country, a very high percentage of them, don't eat a diet that supplies their body with the nutrients needed to make the binding enzymes so that they just get even further exposed to those toxic chemicals, because the phase one works really well. Your body's really good at sorting out all these toxins from your food and exposing you to them, but if you don't have the things there, it actually makes it more dangerous, because now you're just fully exposed to these toxins that were in your food. So you have to pay attention to that. You know, I use an herb called Shizandra in my drink, TNT, and the thing I love about Shizandra is that it helps your body make the enzymes you need to detox from a lot of these chemicals you find in your food. It contains something called a lignin, which is the same thing that was found in Brussels sprouts years ago when the AMA was telling you to eat Brussels sprouts because they contain a certain lignin that bound with carcinogens in your diet, and then it was anti-cancerous. Well, Shizandra has 21 of those types of lignin, whereas Brussels sprouts have one. So if you eat a little of it every day, that's just one of the many effects you can, or helpful benefits you can get from having Shizandra in your diet. So a lot of herbs are like that anyway. They're concentrated green foods and plant foods that helps your body make enzymes and helps your body actually do a lot of different functions beyond what you might have been told it was actually used for. You know, I talk about adaptogens a lot, but yeah, that's their main function. But on the other side, they detox your liver, they build up your energy, they make your adrenals stronger, they do all these different things. It's just that you always have to pick one that you're mainly going to talk about, so that people don't get confused over it. You know, one of the most interesting things I saw, and it was a great example about how you can't rely on the government to do much for you. I'm always shocked when they do something really good about enforcing environmental laws. I love it when they're paying attention to that. But just this week, the head of the EPA decided not to go ahead with a study that they were going to do. They were offering families $970 to expose their kids to pesticides for 2 years, and then they were going to study them. Think about that. So it works out roughly to $485 a year to expose your kids to pesticides. Now, I don't know what they were thinking about to get that information. One, why would you want to expose your kids to pesticides for 2 years for a study? And then number two, why would they want to even pay anybody? All the kids are exposed to pesticides anyway. Why don't they just pick them out and test them? It's not like you'd have to go very far to find a family exposed to pesticides every day. Just to find one that's shopping at the local grocery store. You know, this is really a dumb idea. And luckily, the guy didn't wait for some committee to get rid of it. He just canned it on his own. He thought it was stupid. So, but this is what's going on in your country, that you can't depend on other people to help you out and to set up some national program where we're going to test all women who are going to conceive and make sure they don't have toxins in their bloodstream and make sure they know what their diet is. And I mean, right now they're just talking about eating your standard American diet during your pregnancy. There's not really that much education even around the normal types of foods that you eat during your pregnancy. I was lucky enough when we had all our kids to have actually taken some classes and to find out at what phases of your diet you should eat particular foods. And the most fascinating thing I found out, which I was shocked I didn't know about, but it was just so fascinating to me. And I've mentioned this many, many times and nobody knows it, is that when you're pregnant and you're moving into your last trimester, that's when the brain goes through its greatest growth spurt. So you have to raise your levels of protein and eat protein at least every 3 hours when you're eating that day so that the brain gets what it wants to fully develop. It needs protein to develop brain mass. And when you do that, that's why your baby turns upside down and makes it easier for it to come out of the uterus, because it's supposed to be coming out head first. And when the brain grows big enough, because it's floating in a big tub of water anyway, I shouldn't use the word tub, that was bad. It's floating in this, let's say it's just floating in the water. So the reason it turns upside down is because the head's the heaviest part. If you think about taking a gallon jug of water, filling it up halfway, if you throw that gallon milk bottle out into a lake, what happens? It just sits straight up because the heaviest part is down in the water. Same thing happens with a baby. Turns upside down, the head's in the perfect position to actually come out. If you don't, and you just eat a lot of carbohydrates, and you eat a lot of fast food that has way too much carbohydrate in it, what you end up with, oftentimes, you'll have a greater chance of that baby not actually turning fully and not being in a position to come out head first. And the other thing that happens is that your baby will often be very large, yet not heavy. It'll just be kind of soft and swollen because of too much water weight. And that makes it much harder for birth too. And so, you know, diet and exercise is so important during that last 3 months to ensure that your baby's not only, it affects its musculature system. You know, my first daughter, when she was born, she had calf muscles that the nurses were all just talking about, because my wife danced so much and exercised so much. And she weighed 9 pounds, yet was completely slim. It was really quite amazing. So the reality is all these things need to be taken into consideration, yet I don't think there's that much education going on with people about how to even do that basic phase of nutrition in the last 3 months. So I have to wrap it up because, I can't have a real long call tonight. But you have to realize, and I want to throw this last thing in, is that there's a lot of studies coming out these days around epigenetics. And if you're not familiar with that term, epigenetics is kind of the new way of looking at genetics and how it affects your health. And epigenetics is really all about getting away from that old idea that you're born with a genetic predisposition for anything. But what it means is, epi means above, so it's above genetics or above yourself. Your cells or your genes are expressing themselves due to the signals that they're getting at any given moment. So what generally happens when you have a genetic expression of a disease, it's because the signaling was wrong to that cell and it wasn't healthy. You can control all that through eating well, exercising, avoiding alcohol, smoke, all these different things. And what they've found now with epigenetics is that they've studied groups of rats in labs and expose them to poor nutrition. And then when they're born, they're genetically primed for having obesity, diabetes, slow growth, cardiovascular disease, and all kinds of neurodegenerative diseases and delays in their development, all based on poor nutrition. And that development will affect that family for 2 to 3 generations. That's how long it'll last you. In fact, the great thing about it is, though, is that when people come out, or, you know, when the nutrition is changed, so to speak, what happens is that genetically, the signaling will be different to those cells, and it can actually change some of that quickly. And it doesn't have to last generation to generation. So what it's showing is, even after the nutrition has changed and the signaling changes to the cell, then the genetics actually start to express themselves differently. So we have all this ability to actually have an amazing outcome. And not only in our own lives, you know, as adults, we can see how our body changes within 3 to 4 weeks of eating really well and supplementing a bit, having different nutrition, but we have this we have to take into consideration that we're not just having kids, we're actually making a new human being, and what we eat during that 9 months or that year before is going to affect that human being for its entire life. And we have control somewhat over whether that child may be born with something that's going to affect its brain development for its entire life. And so we should be a little more serious and a little more aware and conscious about what we eat, because we're creating new human beings, and not just look at it as something that's going to happen. And that's what happens with almost everybody that has kids. I'm going to open it up, Zach, by asking a few questions before I hit the road. I have a very early flight to the airport in the morning, about 4 a.m., so I have to kind of wrap
up. Absolutely. Well, what I'm going to do, guys, is open up the lines. What you'll need to do to ask Roger a question, let me just open this up real quick so we can get the queue started. You'll want to hit *6 on your phone.
Q&A session started.
Okay, you can go ahead and hit *6 on your phone. Do we put in the queue and connect Roger anything you want? Roger, what kind of time do you have? It's,
You can do 3 questions. I'm not worried about it so much.
Okay. Awesome. Our first caller is coming from area code 204, ending in 9003.
Hi, Roger. It's Michelle calling from Dauphin, Manitoba. How are you?
Hi. I'm great.
Good. You sound awesome. You had mentioned that DHA in organic milk, that children should have omega supplements. How else can we provide supplements for young children?
Well, the problem with young children is that they don't like to, it's very hard to get them to take anything in a capsule or a pill, so you have to get them something in liquid, and that is an advantage of having it like that, unless you have something that you can mash up into some other little type of food and feed it to them on a spoon. Fish oil is actually not very hard to give a child. You don't need to give them very much, and my kids, especially my daughter who had the problem with E. coli, got a lot of fish oil afterward. It was really good for her kidneys and helping them to regenerate. So kids will take that on a spoon. And I was surprised that my kids didn't mind it at all. And so that might be one way of doing it. I'm sure that if you were breastfeeding and were supplementing with omega-3s, that would easily translate over to.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you have a question for Roger, you can hit *6 on your phone. Roger, our next caller is coming in from area code 253, ending in 1522. Oh, hang on. Didn't open up for some reason. Bear with me 1 second. There we go. 253, ending in 1522.
Hi, Roger. Thank you very much for the information today. My question is about fluoride. My granddaughter is receiving fluoride in a pill form, and I was wondering if you could provide me with a resource that I can provide to my son and daughter-in-law on the dangers of fluoride.
Why would anybody take a pill of fluoride?
The dentist has prescribed that because they have well water, they're not on city water, and so thus he is informing them that the children are not receiving fluoride in the water and must supplement with pills.
Oh, wow. What part of the country is this in?
Eastern Washington.
You know? Eastern Washington, wow. Okay, I have never heard of that in my entire life. I would go to some of the best sources for fluoride and the dangers of it is on Mercola.com. You familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Go in and put in a search engine just dangers of fluoride. You can put in fluoride in children, whatever, but there's so much science on that website, and he'll have connections to books that you can also get on fluoride exposure. And you can look up also Russell Blaylock and B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K, Blaylock. He writes a lot on dangers of fluoride and fluoride poisoning. and exposure to fluoride. There's never been any proof that shows that adding fluoride to the water actually improves the health of your teeth. It's all just BS. There's no science behind it at all. Literally, there's none at all. So it's amazing to me that anyone would give their kids fluoride tests.
Thank you, Roger.
Sure.
All right, Roger, we've got a couple more callers. Next caller is coming in from area code 828, ending in 2718.
Hi, Roger. This is Ruth. How are you? Hi, Zach.
Ruth, can you hold on for a second? I want to say something for the last person.
Please do, because
you know,
I'm rolling.
Back in the 20s, I think it was around in the 20s and 30s, they used to give you fluoride pills from the doctor for hyperactive thyroid because it slowed down or killed off some of your thyroid function. And this was told to me by a pharmacist, actually, who had showed me the little box. He collects old pill boxes, and he showed me that fluoride was a treatment for hyperactive thyroid, and one of the first rat poisons ever made was just fluoride in a box. So it just blows my mind that someone's giving kids fluoride in tablets for the teeth. All right, Ruth, it's your turn.
Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. But I was wondering, my daughter, she's 20, and she's going to be, starting to have children down the road here, hopefully not too soon. But I went to the Remlin Center, and they had a protocol on their website on, supporting the child with vitamin C and a couple other things before getting any vaccinations, and to get them individually, like you said, not multiple. And is that something that would, help, or not to get the vaccines at all? What are we?
Well, I never make that decision for people. I do know that my kids have never had vaccines. I think one of them might have had one vaccine, but it's not something I did with my own kids.
Right.
And it's probably true that, certain supplementation with vitamin C and different things, I would think vitamin D would help a lot with some of these side effects. In fact, I kind of had to cut my talk short, and I never got to the fact that one of the most important things that you could supplement with while you're when you're going to have a baby is vitamin D, because there's a lot of incidences in this country now of kids being born vitamin D deficient, and it makes them bruise really easily and get a lot of fractures, and there's actually been instances of kids being taken away from their parents because of suspected child abuse, and there was nothing at all. They were just experiencing fractures at a high rate because their bones were so weak. And it was really hard for the parents to get them to even test for rickets or anything because they just didn't think about it. But it's pretty bad. I mean, when you look at the fact that they think 75% of the population is vitamin D deficient, well, what would that tell you about children then?
Yeah.
So, I think it's one of the most important things you could actually supplement with.
Very good. Yeah, on this center, it's R-H-I-M-L-A-N-D Center. They actually put the protocol on there for, mothers and fathers to learn about some of the protocol. So.
Now, there's a lot of great information out about vaccines now. And, McCullough, again, has some great information. And you can get linked up with a national organization that educates you about vaccines. And the great thing about them is they're not against vaccines. They're just against, they just think
you should
be educated about every single one of them and make a conscious decision that you shouldn't have vaccines jammed down your throat, especially 9 of them at one time.
Yeah. There's a pediatrician down in Florida that has always, supplemented and given his children, them individually with time in between. And he has never had any incidents. You know, but nobody hears about him.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense to me. One at a time and months in between and not before they're a year old. I mean, some of these vaccines are for sexually transmitted diseases that you know, the average three-month-old is not going to come in contact with. I mean, think about it. It doesn't make any sense. It makes any sense. Oh, wow. You know, now they want vaccines for smoking, for drinking, for, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Shoot. Well, have a safe trip and hurry back
home
safely. Yes. Always good to talk with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Truth.
A couple more callers, Roger.
Coming in from 612, area code 612, ending in 3220.
Hi, Roger. This is Nancy Claremont from Minneapolis. Thanks for your great information once again. Couple questions. What should smaller children be supplemented with overall after they're born?
Well,
I mean, assuming they can have a good diet.
If they're having a good diet, I would say that a little bit of vitamin C every day and a small amount of vitamin D. And you can always buy a liquid multivitamin if that's what you want to do. But if the mother is breastfeeding, she should be able to give a lot of that to the kids just on her own. And I really suggest that everybody do the breastfeeding route for a long period of time and the mother supplement.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, like I have a 6-year-old now and a 9-year-old, and they get vitamin D almost every day. I always say almost because I never remember to do anything every day of the week. But I do it in little droplets that I add to their food so they never know anything's happening. And they love, you know, put vitamin C in different things. So they get basics of nutrition.
Uh-huh.
I do have omega-3s that I add to stuff. I make sure they get really good farm-raised eggs for omega-3s. There's a lot of little things you can do with kids.
Uh-huh.
Certain green foods, you know, like, they don't mind barley grass supplements but you know, you don't have the occasion of getting it in them every day. So there's little ways you can supplement them with it. But anything you can do, really. The main thing with kids is not overloading them with sugar and not giving them foods with high levels of toxins in it.
Okay. And I would assume that as they get older, all of these things in increasing amounts are still the best strategy for supplementing.
Yeah. It's, you know, it doesn't take that much with a kid because they're not making conscious decisions or worried about whether it works for anything.
Right.
That's the main drawback with humans, with adults, you know.
Yeah. This is a question on vitamin D. Do you, for adults, do you have recommended amounts of vitamin D that people should take, assuming they don't have everyday exposure to sun?
I think the latest chart I read was 1,000 IUs for every 35 pounds of body weight.
Oh, that's a great
study. You talk to a lot of them say 5,000 a day for adults.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I read one study out of a medical university in San Diego that said that they think the optimum amount for adults was 8,000 IUs. And another study showed that they thought you could take 20,000 IUs a day for a year without getting any complications.
Yeah.
That might be a little high, but I think 5,000 is not really that much at all. I think 1,000 IUs is only 15 milligrams, something like that. The IU is kind of confusing because we don't use it a whole lot. I don't see it to be that big of a deal to do 5,000 a day. That's my opinion, but I noticed even my skin reacts differently to the sun when I supplement like that.
Huh. Okay, awesome.
I find
Thank
that it doesn't burn as easy out in the sun, so.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much again.
Sure.
All right, Roger, get a couple more calls. How much time do you have?
Oh, two more calls, that's it. I gotta go.
Okay, so we got
Next caller is coming in from area code 707, ending in 5922.
Hey, Roger, this is Terry, now in Idaho, as always, loving your call. I have, my question is that most of your discussion on diet, of course, it puts the onus on the mom because she's carrying the fetus. But in that time leading up to getting pregnant, that year that you're talking about, it's equal, you touched mildly on the increase in the feminine side to mankind, the importance
right.
of that year ahead of time for daddy to be doing cleansing and eating well, because if he's out there eating whatever and drinking whatever, his contribution to the equation isn't going to be much.
Yeah. Yes, we are more than a sperm donor, even though a lot of people look at us that way. But, in Chinese medicine, that's a huge, huge issue. And in fact, they look at that very highly, how the man, within even just 2 to 3 months of supplementing with certain herbs, actually can change the quality of the sperm to make it much more vibrant and how would you even put it, genetically active, so to speak, to where it's completely transformed by just 3 months worth of supplementation. In fact, you can see a difference, really, in quantity within a couple of weeks of taking herbs. And so, you know, fertility issues is a big thing in Chinese herbology, and I've had a lot of personal experience with that, to where I've given herbs to people and have them change the quantity. In fact, had them have 3 times as much sperm within 2 to 3 weeks, which is quite astounding. But it's not just the quantity. The whole quality of it changes because there's not that much concentrated food in the American diet that has a direct effect on that. But no, that is completely true. I mean, it's just anything that weakens your overall health will weaken your the quality and quantity of your sperm count. And so that will have a direct effect. You know, Chinese medicine is all about life force. They're all about increasing life force in the man and the woman before conception, because when that comes together, that determines the prenatal jing, they call it, life force, and then the mother has the greatest effect on it from that point forward. For sure, it's a great concern, and you can have a really profound effect on the male's contribution within a few months.
What are the herbs? Are those herbs relatively common and in use and available?
Oh, yeah. They're all tonic herbs, like the ones I use in Tian Chi. In fact, one of the main ones for building sperm count is Ho Sho Wu. But it always works a little bit better depending on what issue you have going on if you combine it with other things.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, Roger, we have one other caller. And Roger, you're not a marketer because we do have products for, actually it's not so much for sperm count enhancing sperm, but it is for enhancing sex. And I wanted to ask you, Roger, on those specific products, do those increase sperm count in the male as well? Some of the ED products
sure.
that we have?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, we don't have any EE products for sale, Zach. That's why I'm
not talking about yet, but that, like I say, that's coming. The site's being built and so forth. So, you know, it's all in the works. You've got a lot of stuff coming up. Anyway, that's why I wanted to stay in touch with Roger and see what's going on with the new website and blogs and Facebook. So just make sure you keep in touch with these emails when we send them out. All right, Roger, one last caller coming in area code 602, ending in 5771.
Hi, Roger. It's Linda King in Phoenix. Really enjoy your talks. I saw the video that you had online about the little girl with the go-go or the go juice or whatever it was. What do you do with a child like that? Got her started on it. Now what are you going to do with her?
Well, at that age, you can easily get her off of the Red Bull and just maybe give her some tea if she needs a little caffeine to transition, or you can just let them go through the crying and the screaming and the fits when they withdraw from it, because they're probably doing a bit of that every day anyway, and just withdraw them from it and give them some better nutrition. You know, just having more omega-3 fatty acids and more foods that have choline in it will help her brain adapt or keep up its speed without those drinks and without the, you know, the Mountain Dew in it. But more than likely, if you took a look at the mother in that film,
oh my gosh,
there's not a whole lot of other nutrition going on in that environment. There's not any, really. I mean, that child, besides being poisoned with the drink, is eating really horribly. And they probably don't know it. They're probably on the Paula Deen diet, you know. But the reality is there's not much nutrition going on there anyway. I always feel really bad when I see those videos because they obviously don't know anything about nutrition.
Right.
And if they have that stuff in the house anyway, and then the parents are probably living on it anyway.
Correct.
You know, I doubt if that mother just decided one day, I think I'll go get some Red Bull and Mountain Dew for the kid and see if that works. No, they probably have cases of it sitting inside the refrigerator. And they're probably living on it anyway.
Right. I remember.
She was greatly obese, and there was just, you know.
Well, the thing that was got him.
It's shocking whenever I see something like that someone would think that was okay to give their kids. I don't know if you ever saw the special on PBS that was about medicating children with antidepressants. Well, they showed this woman who looked, you know, very similar body type, everything to that woman that was in that video. And she was talking about her little kid and how he's on 8 different drugs now. He's 7 years old. They've tried him on 4 different antidepressants. He's on an anxiety med. He's sitting there while she's talking, eating a hot dog in a white bun and drinking a neon blue liquid out of a bottle. Now, I don't know about you, but there's nothing that's good for you that comes in neon blue. And she's talking about how she doesn't understand why he has so much problems with his thinking and stuff, his behavior.
Right.
Yet he's just swimming in chemicals with everything he does. And he's on 8 different drugs.
Wow.
And so, you know, there's just not much. There's very little connection for most people between what they're putting in and what actually happens. We're all kind of brainwashed in this country. I don't know how it happens. It's not just from brainwashing, but just from not being told any differently, that nothing we do affects what we're just what we are. Right?
Well, it's available.
Yeah,
it's okay. You know, somebody said it was okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I am the way I am. Whether it's 300 pounds or just off, is that because, you know, my body's this way. I was just born this way. And that's not how it works.
Right. Well, you know, there was another thing that she mentioned, that she thought later in life that her daughter was going to be fine and going to be a thin girl. She said something like that, in essence of that she wasn't going to worry about her being overweight because her daughter wasn't going to be like that. I thought, why wouldn't she be like that?
Yeah, why wouldn't she be like that?
Anyway, thank you so much for letting me hear your answer and my opinion on that. It was disheartening, though. Anyway, thank you, Roger.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, Zach, that's call it a day.
It's a wrap. All right, awesome. If you want to know more about Roger and his teachings, you can go to AskRogerDrummer.com. These calls are also recorded. I do have to get the last couple of weeks up and running. There's a callback number if you want anyone else to listen to this, and that number is area code 712-432-1085. Again, 712-432-1085, with the PIN code being 881202. So, thanks, Roger. Have a great night.
All right. Night.